I think it says a recording, and that means a recording. Hello, listeners. Hello, Jennifer Lawrence. Hello, Tom Hiddleston. I can hardly say the word hello for some reason. I'm already tripping over that. And hello, Bonnie. Hi, Bonnie. Ruff.
Oh, hi, Bonnie.
Welcome to podcast episode 114 here at Screen Invasion and Invasion Radio. My name is Mel Foster, as you probably know this if you've listened to this before. If you haven't, though, and this is your first time, you're in for a treat. I don't know what's coming up, but I can tell you it's going to be a treat. I'm not here by myself, because that would be a little bit weird. I'm here with Mr. Daniel Seraf.
Hi.
And TV's very own Gwen Reyes is in the building.
Hello. And apparently Bonnie's mom. That's what I'm
What you're known now? Is that what's on your business card? Yep. Instead of John Hamm Bernard?
I should stick that on my...
Bonnie's mom.
Put that on my resume. Bonnie's mom.
Yeah. That's a good thing
Your
to stick
resume
on.
Should just be a photo of Bonnie. I think you would just get every job.
Totally, exactly. No words, just one photo. The cutest photo you can find of her. And I think that's guaranteed employment wherever you hand that in. But yeah, so how are we all doing? We've all had a good 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's been okay.
it's been okay. All right, I'll take that. I'll take that.
Well, I've got some things that there's something I want to talk about. I've got to review, and I was pretty disappointed by it. So you'll see why I have mixed feelings about the last week in a little bit.
All right, that's piqued my interest already. Well, let's not waste any time. Let's regularly do and jump into this. sorry, that man's on my brain. He's on my mind. Probably not the best person to have creeping around your subconscious, but hey, these things happen. Yeah, let's jump into the melting pot. Let's see what we have been checking out the last couple of weeks. We'll start with you, Dan, because I'm really interested in what you've been disappointed with. So what have we got?
Well, I've got two things. Well, I'll start with the disappointment, seeing as we're leading on that foot. The disappointment that I saw this week was the new Terry Gilliam film called The Zero Theorem. Mm-hmm. For several reasons. First of all, it's Terry Gilliam. You know, this guy made Brazil, which is like one of the best science fiction movies ever made. One of the best movies ever made, full stop. Mm-hmm. Starring Christoph Waltz, Matt Damon, Lucas Hedges, Menelaui Theory, like a bunch of great people, great cast. Ben Whishaw's in there too, Peter Stormare as well. It's kind of a return to the Brazil kind of universe in a sense. It's this kind of allegorical, like satirical sci-fi with Christoph Waltz at the center playing this kind of data crunching kind of worker bee for this big tech company called Mancom, kind of looking for the meaning of his life and working on this project called the Zero Theorem, which is like this project to find this algorithm that will explain like the whole meaning of the universe. And he kind of wastes his life working on this, so much so that he doesn't really have any meaningful existence. It's like it's one of like those kind of big idea, lo-fi aesthetic movies that Terry Gilliam was very famous for, and I kind of hoped it would be a return to form for him, but it really kind of isn't. The whole thing's sort of a mess, really. It's very muddled and perplexing and confusing. Brazil was also very funny, and this attempts to be very funny in that kind of eccentric Terry Gilliam, Monty Python way. But it just, you know, this is a guy that seems to be kind of past his heyday, really. None of the jokes really landed, and I mean, you've got to kind of respect it because it has so many big ideas, and I'd rather watch a film that tries and fails rather than one that doesn't really try at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw a quote from Mark Kermode, the British film critic, who says that, like, the film's a failure, but it sort of fails on its own terms, which I think kind of sums it up really well. It is very ambitious. Its main flaw is the fact that it can't really meet those ambitions, but you know, it doesn't kind of excuse the fact that this is a bit of a mess, really. It's confusing and it's all over the place, and it's just an enormous disappointment, really.
That's a shame, because he's got a good track record. I mean, maybe not so much of recent, but certainly in the past. You mentioned Brazil, yeah. And it sounds a little bit Brazil-ish, the concept of it, and it's got like a really good cast in there, particularly Christoph Waltz. So it's a shame, because that's not the first disappointment I've heard of this film. A few other people have kind of been a little bit let down by it, but it's a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. Like you said, Brazil and Fear and Loathing and Time Bandits. Like, this guy's got a great track record, and you know, I guess you can't really criticize its ambitions, but it is all over the place.
Hmm. Well, that's disappointing, as you say. But what else have you seen? Hopefully something that's enlightened you a bit more than Zero Theorem.
Yeah, something much, much better. We mentioned it on the last episode that we recorded, but I finally got around to watching True Detective. I pretty much binge watched it from like Sunday to Monday, finished it early hours of Monday morning. And I just absolutely fell in love with it. I know we kind of said that it maybe takes a few episodes for it to really kick in, and it does, I suppose. Like, the end of the third episode onwards, it just kind of kicks into a higher gear. But to be honest with you, I kind of love the whole thing. I guess the narrative doesn't really quite come in until, like, a few episodes in. But I just love the characters. I could have spent so long with Rust and Marty, because they were just such involving and deep characters with so much like history to them and so much backstory to them that was there to explore, and really more so than any of the kind of gothic like murder mystery thing that was going on. Like I found the two of them the most fascinating things about the show. But it is just so good. It's so atmospheric and so stylish, and Cary Fukunawa, who directed it and did like a really good version of Jane Eyre, and made Sinombre, and who's a really good filmmaker, just lends so much to it. And of course, you know, Matthew McConaughey is amazing in it, as too is Woody Harrelson. This is probably one of the better HBO productions I've seen for a long, long time. I don't know if it's quite up there with, like, The Wire and The Sopranos and Deadwood, but it's, like,
it's too early to tell.
I mean, it's an anthology series. There's still more seasons to come.
It's definitely got the potential to be considered with them if it keeps on that quality consistent.
Oh, I hope it does. Yeah, if it does, I would definitely rank it up there with those kind of big HBO productions. I was really, really blown away by it. I absolutely loved it.
Is for the second season, you might know this, Gwen, but is for like the second season, is it going to be handled by the same dude that made it, Nick Polizzi?
Yeah, Pizzolatto. Yeah, he'll be writing it all, but they're going to have different directors. They're not even going to have one single director do all the episodes, because it just takes so much time. So if they can have multiple directors, then they can kind of shoot in different places and not have to like shoot it all and then do posts. So that's their goal. I'm interested to see how that's going to work, because I thought it works so well as like this one really long film that has the stamp of both the writer and the director on it. So I'm interested to see where it's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting and a kind of bold move to take, because especially within the realm of TV, you see it shifted between directors all the time. So to see like a constant presence for a whole run of 8 episodes, I think it works fantastically well when seen as a whole. But I kind of like the idea of giving this property to other people to see what they can do with it, and see what they can add to it. Anybody in particular that we would like to see sort of have a go at directing some True Detective?
I don't know.
To see, if we're going to get filmmakers in, I'd love to see Lynn Shelton do an episode or two.
Good call.
Really?
Yeah.
Lynn Shelton?
Oh, I love her. I think she has such a good eye.
I love Lynn Shelton, but it just seems like so at odds with what True Detective's. I mean, obviously, I guess the characters and the situations and the mood's going to change, but I just kind of associate Lynn Shelton with very kind of lightweight, fluffy stuff, like Your Sister's Sister and stuff.
Yeah, but I think this would be a good way for her to expand her repertoire, and I think it's a good angle to come at. It's slightly different approach. Because I think
while we're talking limbs, I'd love to see Lynn Ramsey.
Do you know what? That is crazy, because I was thinking that as well. I think she'd be a really good choice for that too. She's just got a really good knack, and she knows how to make something look visually engaging and keep your attention. And I think it's a really good source material for someone like that. I think the dude, what's his name, Rian Johnson, I think would be a really interesting choice for this show as well.
Oh, yeah. But he doesn't really have a good idea. He's never really proved himself as a director of like, atmosphere, like, of, like, natural atmosphere. So I think it would be a really fun challenge to see him do something like that.
I think it's a really good property for directors to try and challenge themselves and grow. And sort of alter their style. I think there's a lot that can be done with it, and I'd like to see folk like that. So I think he's a good choice for that, because it would be a challenge for him. But yeah, so some interesting choices. If you want to get on board and let us know who you'd like to see have a crack at directing some True Detective in the future, or even if you haven't seen it yet, get on that first. Do it, trust me. Mm. And then get in touch with us at screeninvasion.com or twitter.com/invasionradio. So is that what you're bringing to the table this week? A bit of Zero Film and True Detective?
There are two things I've seen, obviously one much better than the other.
What about you, Ms. Reyes? What have you been partaking in?
So let's see. I saw the new entry into young adult romance fantasy films. I saw Divergent this week, which comes out in the States Friday.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. I think that it's definitely going to be tapping into like the Hunger Games, and it's a nice blending of like Hunger Games and Twilight, in the sense that, I mean, that the action, it takes just as much precedence as the romance does. And I think that the filmmaker did a really nice job of kind of blending the romantic elements to it, of making her this love interest for the main character. But just to give you an understanding of what the film's about, since I just realized I'm describing
it. I was going
to
say, because I've heard the name. It doesn't have a plot. I've heard the name, but I don't know what it is. So yeah, a little bit of background.
The film is, it takes place in like a distant future post-apocalyptic world in like a post-apocalyptic Chicago. And it revolves around this new society has come out of this, and their way of dealing with the fact that there was rebellions, and we're living in this like very small world. They talk about very early on that other parts outside of Chicago, outside of the wall that they built, it's just decimated. So I'm assuming in the next couple of movies, we might go pop our heads out there and see what decimated actually looks like. But so it follows this girl whose name is Beatrice, who is part of a community called not the Am. Oh man, I can't. They have these weird names and I can't remember them. And that's really sad off the top of my head right now. But she's part of the governing society. And there's five different groups. There's a governing group, a leadership group, a intellectual group, a farming group, the police, and the caretakers. And so you have all these different groups. And what happens is when you come of age, you have to take these series of tests, and then you get slotted into one of these groups. Either you stay with your own original group or you jump into a new one. And so Beatrice, she goes and takes her test, and discovers quickly that she is sort of unique. She doesn't just fit into one group or another. But this sounds really cool, but it's actually something that the erudite, who are like the smart group that's trying to uprise against the leadership group, they're trying to kind of like essentially genocide out all of these people that are called divergents. So if you're a divergent, which means you kind of fit into all these different categories, or, you know, human, you are enemy number one of the governing bodies. And so she has to keep the secret to herself, and she ends up deciding that she's going to leave her home and go into the Dauntless group, which is the police, the governing, the soldiers. And there she quickly realizes that she's not as strong as she thought she was, and she has to kind of prove herself to her group and her people. And then it goes through all these steps, and she falls in love with her superior officer. There's a whole bunch of corruption. Kate Winslet's in it. And it stars Shailene Woodley, who is who we've seen in Spectacular Now, and she's going to be in The Fault in Our Stars and The Descendants. And she plays the main character, and she's actually, I've never really been a big fan of Shailene Woodley, but I thought that she did a really nice job of making Beatrice incredibly relatable, incredibly empathetic, and she is very, very human, and you just want to follow her journey and hope the best for her, even though she keeps getting her face kicked in by her former boyfriend, Miles Teller.
Nice.
And so, yeah, I just talk about it. And it was so funny because I saw it on Tuesday with a group of like super divergent fans, because it's based off of a young adult series, young adult book series, and they were just like losing their shit in the whole theater.
So, and I was like, that's the only way to see these movies. It's crossed over well with its fan base then.
Yes, I think it's going to do really well. It's already selling out. It's already sold more tickets than Twilight in pre-sales. So it's probably going to be a big weekend. Divergent. But it's actually, it's really good. The direction's really nice. It looks a lot more like Hunger Games, like the Catching Fire, where they seem to understand how to use a handy cam and get into people's faces. The choreography on the fight scenes leaves a little to be desired. I think that it definitely shows that they didn't have enough time to train the actors very well in their hand-to-hand combat. But hopefully in the next one they'll have a little bit more time. But it's actually really, really good, and I enjoyed it. I have a couple of issues with it. It had something that I'm still trying to figure out how to write about it, but it's got this very interesting element of like sexual violence running throughout it that I'm not quite sure if just as a woman I'm picking up on it or if that's actually an intentional thing or something. Because there's these moments where she is now sent to this very like brutish society, and the characters, if this had not been geared to a young adult audience, I feel like sexual violence would have been used to kind of keep the girls that were coming into this in line, because there's just these weird thuggish, it's like sexual thuggery that's happening in this film. And then there's even a moment where she has to battle her own fears, and one of her fears is getting raped by her the boy that she loves. So there's this interesting sort of violence against women underlying in it, but then you could also say it's violence against children, but I just picked up on that a little bit more, just the way the camera was.
This sounds awfully dark for a young adult thing.
It does. It is. Yeah, it is sounds very dark.
Yeah, it's very dark. But it has it does a much better job of weaving in the romance, which is very, very crucial to the storyline, because it is essentially a romance novel with violent elements added into it.
It seems a lot less shy to kind of treat its audience a bit more maturely, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that it definitely it's talking about adult elements in an adult way and just putting those onto children's shoulders, because these are like 16, 17-year-old kids.
Yeah.
It's a fun 2 hours. It does feel, my only problem is at one point I think we were only like an hour and 30 minutes into it, and I leaned over to the person I was with and I was like, oh my god, this movie is never gonna end. And he was like, it's only been an hour and a half. And I was like, oh my god.
Oh, okay, that's maybe not the best sign for that film, but it sounds interesting. Definitely will consider having a look at that, I think.
Me too.
But yeah, there you go, Divergent. What else have you seen, Ms. Reyes?
I'm trying to think. So I went to South By and I saw the new Seth Rogen comedy, Neighbors, that comes out. Seth Rogen and Zac Efron, and it's about a young couple who just had their first baby, and they are grappling with the fact that they're getting older and blah, blah, and it's played by Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne, are a married couple. And in next door moves a fraternity house that is run by Dave Franco and Zac Efron. And it's kind of like a cross between Animal House and Old School, where you kind of have this battling of old versus young. And it's very, very funny. The joke's really good. It's written and directed by Nick Stoller, who did Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And so it's got the good, very raunchy, silly jokes, but then it's also got a little bit of a heart, and it deals with something. I cared for most of the movie except for the ending. I thought the ending wasn't up to snuff and didn't really hold consequences for both groups of people, considering the horrific actions and decisions they were making. But if you're there for just like a comedy and you just want to laugh really hard, it's pretty good for that.
It's a slightly worrying sign when I actually find myself siding instantly with the older couple. Like, at one point, I'd be like, yeah, let's root for the young ones because I'm young and stuff. And now I'm kind of like, oh, how dare they? How rude? Do they not know people need to sleep by a certain time? And it's slightly
worrying. They don't really spend enough time with the fraternity house to even make you sort of sympathetic with them.
Okay.
Another film that I saw at South By is called Oculus, which is a horror film starring Karen Gillian, right? Gillian? From Doctor Who?
Yeah, the lady from Doctor Who, yeah.
And I actually have to say, I have walked out of my first movie in my entire life.
Say what? Whoa.
It was Oculus.
Oh, that's big stuff. Explain why.
Yeah.
I heard that the ending was good, but I sat through an hour of that movie, and it was, I sat through it, and it was not very good, and I did not enjoy it. And it was, the gist of what it is it takes place in two time periods. Karen plays a sister to this boy who just got busted out of, who just got, not removed, but let go from a psychiatric hospital, and they're trying to figure out what really happened, and because it goes back to their childhood and their dad, played by Rory Cochran, who was in Empire Records, and Katie Sobieski. They are her parents, and the dad apparently came upon this enchanted, haunted mirror that makes him do crazy shit, and he killed his mom. And some shit happens, and it's weird.
As you do, as will happen when picking up old antique mirrors.
Yep. And it was very slow, and I was bored. So
did you leave simply because it just didn't feel like it was getting anywhere? Or was there something that just sort of broke the camel's back that just made you went, no, don't want to see this anymore?
Yeah, there was, so it just felt really, really slow, which I just have, I usually don't have a hard time with slow horror films because I always feel like they're leading up to something.
Yeah.
But there weren't enough, but in an hour of a like a 90 minute film, of an hour of that, I didn't have one scare, you know? So there wasn't,
right.
I was like, if they're going to pack everything into the last 20 minutes, I don't really care. And it was also a midnight movie, and I just can't do midnight films. I get so sleepy.
Well, welcome to the Growing Old Gracefully podcast, where we side with married neighbors and we go to sleep early in the evening. You young kids, go and have your fun. We want to be in bed by a certain time. Yeah, it sounds, I can kind of understand, because if nothing's happened, if there's been no sort of sign that the tide is changing within an hour, it kind of really says to me that there's probably not going to be much change whatsoever.
And the acting wasn't very good. Like, I thought Karen's acting was very reactive and very wooden, and it was just obnoxious. I was like, this girl's supposed to be a very good actor, and she was constantly, like, to me, like, she was trying to remember her lines.
Which is never good. You don't want to be seeing that in a performance.
No.
Ever. All right, so a couple of disappointments this week. I mean, if I remember rightly, the last episode we had was nothing but a love fest, but it seems like we've got a few disappointments. Anything else you want to throw in, or is that you?
That's basically it. I've just been doing that and trying to get through Doctor Who again. I came back after a month break.
You had a month's break? Wow, that's a bit of a long gap between.
Yeah.
How is it? Whereabouts are you? You still liking it?
Yeah, I'm still, I mean, it's fine.
Right, wow, well, you've sold me on that one.
Yeah, I don't feel like I am the Doctor, I don't feel like I'm a Doctor Who fan, but I've committed and I'm going to watch it, and I'm just whatever. Whatever with Doctor Who.
So you're not ready to put Whovian on your resume?
No, I was at first for a little while because I like the world and I really like Rose, and I just got to a point where there was a really good Rose conclusion, so I'm happy for Billy Piper, but the rest of the show I'm not super in love with.
Alright, well, there you go, listeners. Watch this space. She might get turned around. You might just be going through a dry spell.
Everybody says that Matt Smith is a darling sweetheart, so hopefully I'll enjoy his Doctor, who I should be getting to either today or tomorrow.
I've not seen any of his doctoring, but he does look quite a charming individual, so I'm going to hold out hope for you that that is the case. I saw a few things in the last couple of weeks, one of which, you, Miss Reyes, was very sort of vocally supportive of, because of its lots of naked men and violence and even the hate sex. I went to see 300 Rise of an Empire, based simply on a curiosity further progressed by your excitement for the film. And I gotta say, you were really wrong on this one, because it was nothing but just an utter bore fest. It was so overly...
You're so wrong.
It was so boring and dull. It's like they went, okay, so we'll take some of the stylistic techniques and we'll turn it up a little bit louder. We'll throw in so much slow motion that it feels like you've been in the theatre for a fortnight. And, oh, let's take the fun out and we'll just stick in loads of exposition with loads of voiced backstory. The only thing that I really liked about it was Eva Green. The rest of it, I was just like, oh, you know that thing you said about when is this going to end? And it was only like an hour and a half in. I think I had that feeling about 35 minutes into it. and I still had a long way to go. Yeah, I just, I wasn't feeling it. And it's a shame because I really liked the first 300 film from 2006. I thought it was kind of camp and hammy and brutal and stylish and what have you, but it just seemed like all of the fun was taken out of Rise. So, yeah, sorry.
I'm so sad for you.
Yeah. And the hate sex scene was slightly awkwardly placed, I must admit. I kind of thought, okay, would this ever really happen? This feels like I shouldn't be watching this. Why am I watching this? Why have you put this in? What's happening? How long have we got left? That was kind of the thought process. But there has been a couple of pleasant surprises over the last couple of weeks. I did tease that I was going to watch Nymphomaniac Volume 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah, I really want to hear your thoughts on this.
And,
I can already tell by the sigh.
Go on. Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. It should be viewed as a whole film. And I know it's a lot to take in because it's like 4 hours, but it should be viewed as a whole film. However, despite it being a whole film, theoretically, in terms of my enjoyment, it was very much a two-film experience. The first volume, and this is a real surprise, even to me, I actually really quite like the first volume. I thought...
You know what, I'll take that. I'm happy with that. Honestly.
I thought, here's an interesting idea. He's not over-lavered it with his usual von Trierisms. Yes, he's been a bit cheeky here and there, but it's actually really quite interesting. And the sort of relationship between Joe and Stellan Skarsgård's character actually starts off interesting. And granted, it's a bit weird with the fishing metaphors and the mathematical equation theories, but I kind of like that. I thought, all right, you've been a bit smarmy, but in a way that I can kind of accept and go, do you know what? You're actually doing something interesting here. So I get to the end of Volume 1, and I make it through Shire's accent, we shall call it, which is a little bit all over the place, to put it nicely. And I'm thinking, do you know what? Bring on Volume 2. I'm ready for this. I've enjoyed Volume 1. It's set up nicely. Some great performances in it. Let's go on to Volume 2. And then it's just like he has to ruin it. He has to just do everything I hate about his work. It's just, oh, right, you didn't see this, but I'm going to whip off this cloth and here's a control panel full of buttons I'm going to push, which is just going to make you go, what the fuck? No, stop it. No, put it away. Ah, what are you doing that for? And that's kind of like the experience for the whole of Volume 2. There are moments in it which are okay, but it just severely lets the first volume down. And it's just so typically von Trier. There are a couple of moments, and I think you said when we talked about this last time, there would be two moments
in which I
would be like, right, that's it, okay, game over. There is a moment, and I'm gonna say this now, if you want to see the film, and you don't want this spoiled, scrub forward a little bit. But there's a moment in which... And I don't even know why, other than the fact he just wants to annoy people, which seems to be his MO for Volume 2. Volume 1, it's like, let's tell an interesting story. Volume 2, let's just piss off everyone. Volume 2, there's a scene in which Joe is basically saying, ooh, do you know what? Do you know who I feel sorry for? Paedophiles. Paedophiles who don't touch children. Isn't that horrible for them? And I'm just like, no, it's not. Stop it. And it's just hateful. Volume 2 is hateful.
Yeah. That was the first moment. What was the second one? I think I might have got it
the
right.
Ending. Wait. The ending.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it would be the racism that would annoy you.
Oh well, yeah, no, that was.
I mean, it was only a little moment, but I thought it would be one of the moments where you were like, you know what, fuck this.
No, it's a little moment, but it's something I would kind of expect from him. I mean, the thing is, I expect everything from kind of him, but it's because it was just kind of fleeted over, which kind of makes me think, yeah, you think you're all brave by doing controversial things, but really, when it comes to putting your nuts on the table, you'll only just brush them and then pull them away, won't you, you big scaredy bitch. But no, the ending really kind of pissed me off because I thought it ended quite nicely how she'd actually forged a connection. And again, if you've scrubbed forward and you've got this point without spoilers, scrub forward again because I'm going to spoil something else. But they share a kind of moment in which she's like, she's looking, I don't know what she's looking for, but she kind of finds a connection of comfort. And then he comes in the end with his pants down going, oh, come on, love, let's have a go. And she shoots him. And it's just like, well, that's ridiculous. That's utterly ridiculous. And you've just...
Yeah, it was quite a poignant ending until it all got a bit racy.
Absolutely. It was totally poignant because you see what a brutal time this woman's kind of put herself through and kind of been subjected to at different times. And she finds, like, a source of comfort. And then the source of comfort turns out to be filled with anthrax and just full of horny hormones and wandering into the room with his pants down. And it's just, like, ridiculous.
I do agree, by the way, that I think the second part is a lot weaker than the first one, but I think there are enough things in the second part to still kind of sustain it.
Jamie Bell's performance in Volume 2 is a saving grace, because that is a performance I would never have expected from him, and he's great in Volume 2. And to be fair, Charlotte Gainsbourg's great in both volumes, but it's just there's so much button pushing and so much deliberate, ooh, I'm going to piss people off. And it's like, why? Because you've proved to me, one of your biggest denouncers, that I actually can sit through a film and say it's good, and then you just kind of just piss all over it again. And it's frustrating as hell.
There's... I sort of see that as like 5 minutes of a 4-hour experience, so I can kind of overlook it on the strength of like how many like things I liked about the second half. Mm-hmm. But I do agree with you on that, really.
It's just, you came so close, Lars. You came so close. So close. And you had to ruin it. The other surprise is I went to see Grand Budapest Hotel by Wes Anderson. Well, here's the thing. I'm not a huge Wes Anderson fan. I like some of his work. I think his earlier work's better. I think some of his other work is really kind of trite and cliched and just totally, whatever. And I have to say, I wasn't really expecting much at all from Grand Budapest, but I enjoyed it an awful lot. I had a really good time. And I'm really pleased that I liked it, because there's just such a lot to love about that film. It's just really charming, it's funny. The changing aspect ratios was a little bit annoying, but I can overlook that, because there's great performances and there's a great chemistry, and I think it works really well. And yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by how much I actually enjoyed that.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Makes up for Moonrise Kingdom.
Oh, Josh, yeah, you're like the Lars von Trier of podcasting. We had a beautiful moment there, and you just went and ruined it.
I just went in Volume 2.
Well, you know what's funny is I kind of have forgotten until I saw Grand Budapest Hotel how much I enjoy Wes Anderson when he does his whimsical things with inside of an adult world. Mm-hmm. I think that's mm-hmm. one of the things that had turned me off with Moonrise Kingdom is that I found his childlike whimsy in adult worlds very, very charming and likable and wonderful. When it's actually involving children, it makes me very uncomfortable. And I don't know if that's just the way he films them or the way that he kind of like takes these children and makes them adult-like. And that's a very weird thing. But I really, really, really loved Grand Budapest Hotel because I thought that it had this really nice darkness and really dark comedy, and then it was also just a very pretty, it was probably one of his best looking films.
Mm-hmm. It kind of has a real sort of dollhouse aesthetic, but it moves together really nicely as well. It's kind of rhythmic, and that might sound boring to some people, but I think it actually works a lot better. I think it's a lot more constrained. His whimsy is there, his sort of quirkiness is there, but it's restrained. It's not, because I've found him a little bit irksome in the past. I've kind of thought, well, really, are we going this far with this? But here, and I think maybe it is because of the world it's set in, it actually does feel a bit more restrained, and you get a little bit of that sort of ennui, but not overloaded. It's a nice combination, and I really enjoyed it. So, and right, Ralph Fiennes is pretty fantastic in it too. He's a wonderful scoundrel.
I think that's probably the best I've ever seen Ralph Fiennes. I genuinely think that, despite all of the like the great work that he's done, I do think this is his best, because it's just a side to him that we've never seen before, and he just nails it so well.
Oh yeah, his performance is fantastic. His presence, just as a standalone character, but also the chemistry that he brings out of other actors as well. The dude who plays young Zero, the chemistry between them is fantastic. It's such an enchanting sort of little partnership between them, and you just find yourself, even though he is a total scoundrel and he does, you know, he fleeces old ladies and he's just pretty rotten, you kind of think, well, you know what, I know I probably shouldn't, but I actually kind of like this guy quite a lot, so
I could watch him swear all day long. This poetry coming out of Ralph Fiennes.
So pleasantly surprised with a little bit of Von Trier, just a bit. And quite a big dab of Wes Anderson as well. So there you go, that's what I've seen this week. Lots and lots of things for you to check out if you haven't already. If you have, or you have your own stuff to contribute, do feel free, go to screeninvasion.com, look for the show notes for this episode 114, or go to twitter.com/invasionradio. Let us know if you've seen anything we've put on the table this week, or if you want to add something yourself, feel free to do so. Would love to hear from you. Right, so at this point, we're going to move into real suggestions, not just stuff we've seen, but stuff that we genuinely love and we want to share and spread across the world like a wonderful vague plague virus thing. It's Elevator Pitch. I'm hoping you two have brought something.
Yep, I have.
And now, is this legit? Did we really bring something, or are we just thinking on the fly?
Doesn't matter.
I genuinely brought something this time.
Well, you saying, Gwen, it doesn't matter, so I'm guessing you
It just... doesn't, because I'm going to have something awesome to talk about.
All right, that's all that matters. There you go, exactly. We'll start with you then, Dan, first, seeing as we started with you first for Melting Pot. Let me just get my timer correct and present. I was somewhat prepared until this point. In fact, I can't even find it. There we go. all right, so for those listening for the first time, what this is basically we pick one thing each episode that we want to just sell the shit out of to you. It could be a movie, it could be a TV series, it could be a series of Renaissance letters from France. It doesn't matter, as long as we love it and we want you to love it, that's all that matters. You've got 30 seconds to sell. And when you hear the first ding, Dan, that's when you begin. You ready?
Mm-hmm, I'm ready.
All right.
Yay, nice. So I kind of mentioned this, I was going to do this last week, but I'm hoping that you've all forgot by now. My kind of elevator pitch this week is going to be the Church's album, The Bones of What You Believe, which I've been listening to pretty much nonstop over the last couple of weeks. It's just pretty much a perfect pop album in my eyes. Incredibly catchy synth pop from Glasgow. The debut album, just full of great tunes and great hooks, particularly The Mother We Share, if you're looking for an entry point. It's really good.
I concur. I was a little bit, I don't know, it took me a little while to warm up to Churches, but when I was doing my album rundown, it was one that I just had on repeat a lot when putting together my end of year list, and it's up there. It's really solid and fun and really colourful. So yeah, I concur completely with that choice. Excellent pick. What about you, Miss Reyes? Are you ready with your pick?
Yeah, I'm ready.
I can be. Yeah,
that speaks volumes. All right. Well, when you hear the first ding, that's when you begin.
I always love that I have to wait so patiently for the ding. So I am picking a movie that I just rewatched yesterday that I think everybody needs to rewatch or watch for the first time. And that is Jim Henson's Labyrinth, which stars David Bowie as the Goblin King and Jennifer Connelly as a young girl named Sarah who goes on a fantasy quest after banishing her brother to the goblins to retrieve him back. And it's got a beautiful mixture of song and Muppets and darkness, and it's great.
The Babe and the Quad Piece. David Bowie's pelvic region is extremely prominent in that film, from what I remember.
It's all I could stare at.
His
eyebrows or his cod piece.
It's hard not to, because it's just there. It's kind of like the invention of 3D before 3D became popular. It's popping out the screen, and it's too much sometimes. As much as I love Bowie.
And it really holds up as, like, the special effects and everything in it. For a film made 30 years ago, it's pretty solid with the special effects.
I haven't seen it for some time. It's a while, but I think maybe a rewatch is due.
Yeah, I recommend it. I had to do a little piece about it yesterday for Crave Online, and I was like, this movie's awesome. I'm glad I'm rewatching this.
Do the puppets hold up still?
Yes.
Yeah, that's good. Cool. Labyrinth. It's kind of a cult classic, and it's easy to see why people love it, because it's got lots going for it. Especially the music. I don't know why, but I really like the soundtrack to that film as well. Dance, yep. Magic dance! That's my belly thing.
Alright, I'm going to see if I can figure out how to do a sound for you. Oh, or Dan, do you have a sound for Mal?
Do we have a ding?
I don't really have any. I've not really thought
about
that.
Didn't last time you just say the word ding?
I think maybe I did.
I actually have a pretty cool Skype keyboard thing going on at some point, but I don't know where that's gone. I miss that. I don't know how you get it back.
I don't know.
I don't know. Can you hear this?
No, I've just lost Skype.
No, you can't.
No, I can't. No.
Because I didn't hear it, so if you can't hear it, I can't hear it. Mm-mm. Okay, well, I'm just gonna ding.
Just
that's
ding.
What I'm gonna do.
Ding until your heart's content.
Ding for you.
All right.
You know, we've only done this like a million times. I should probably get like an official bell or something.
I do.
Can you hear that? Can you hear that?
The actual bell.
Yeah, we heard that.
The actual bell I have
I heard...
is like a hotel reception bell that I have on my desk that I stole from a charity shop.
You stole it from a charity shop?
Hey, look.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard.
I did volunteer admin work for that place. I didn't get paid anything. It was long hours. And it was in a shitty environment, so I thought on my last day, I'm going to have something. And the only thing I could find worth taking was the dingy bell.
They probably needed that bell.
I don't give a shit.
Charity.
I needed my time, and it was taken from me.
Oh.
That's why it's called volunteer work.
What about the poor African children's lives that you've taken from them, Mal, by stealing a bell?
What, by bell? No one was going to buy it. Who's going to buy that?
You don't know that.
What, an African child?
Yeah, an African child's not going to buy
like,
my bell.
Like, my whole country is built upon that, of buying small African children.
Of buying children? Hang on now.
Wait, yeah, okay.
How have we landed into this? How have we landed into human trafficking all of a sudden? I'm confused.
Because you're the one talking about
I'm scared.
Small African children.
I'm confused. I'm not Angelina Jolie. All right, have you got my ding?
Yes.
See you. But... Ready?
Yeah. It's a bit more abrasive than I would have liked, but whatever. My pick for this week's Elevator Pitch is also an album. One I've been spinning a little bit this week. It is the first collaboration project between gangster rapper Freddie Gibbs and California beatmaker Madlib. Madlib's pretty much an icon in hip-hop now. Freddie Gibbs has been carving out his name for the last couple of years. He is very, I'll tell it as you see it, he is a bit rugged and a bit rough, and Madlib makes really soulful, jazzy beats. You wouldn't expect them to go together, but my goodness, they are two great tastes that taste great together. Pinata is the album they've made, and it's available this week. Do you know what? I'm not even going to be modest. I'm going to award myself King of Elevator Pitch. I could sell anything to anyone at this point, I think. I should be doing tele shopping, like infomercials. You wouldn't even need them to go on for 40
minutes. You should just be like, I need 30 seconds of your time and I will have you buying, like, new phone contracts.
Exactly. Hey, you, yes, you. You want to change your life? I can do it in 40 seconds or less. Listen to me. Let's go. And then... there you go. That's my audition right there for any infomercials needing a presenter or teleshopping networks. Don't sell anything to me. There you go. That's an elevator pitch. If you want to let us know what you want to be pitching to us this week, do so by going to screeninvasion.com and twitter.com/invasionradio. In fact, you know what? I'm going to throw down the gauntlet, listeners. If you think you can beat my elevator pitch skills, I want to see you either send in an audio file or upload a video to YouTube. That's right. I'm throwing the gauntlet down, bitches. And try and take my crown. I am the king of pitch. Yeah.
You're the yellow king.
That's right. I'm the yellow king of pitch. Eat it. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to calm down because I'm getting hyped now. Sorry. I'll settle down. But yeah, if you fancy that, listeners, have a go. Bring it.
This suddenly got very Glenn Gray, Glenn Ross, all of a sudden.
Oh, and there's nothing wrong with that. Usually we have a talking point, but I can't think of anything to talk about unless you guys can. What's been happening? What's caught your eye other than missing planes?
Well, I want to play our new game that we were trying to pick.
Oh, for. Yeah, was this the guess what the movie could be by its title game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do
so
it.
So I was gonna pick two movies.
That's
and
right.
And I was gonna give one to each of you to see what you guys could come up with.
Okay, cool. Have you got two?
Yeah.
Awesome. All right.
Okay, who wants to go first? Should we stick with the same rule,
yeah,
or should we?
Yeah, let's.
Okay, all right. Okay, so Dan, you're gonna go first.
And I just have and to I describe want... what the movie's about, right?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna give you a title. So how this is gonna work is I'm gonna give you the title of a film, and you get to describe to me what you think the film is about. And then after you can't come up with anything anymore, I will read the actual IMDb summary.
Oh God. Okay.
So you don't have to do it. You don't have to do it in 30 seconds or anything, but that way you're trying something. So I'm going to pick. And what I'll do also is I will tell you who the two main stars are so you can do stuff with them.
Okay.
It sounds ominous.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Do you want to know the director also?
No, go ahead. I'm good with the cast, I think. This is going to be so terrible. I have no improvisational qualities whatsoever.
Yeah, you just make it up. Okay, so the film title is Lock, and it stars Tom Hardy and Ruth Wilson.
Lock, I think, is about Tom Hardy trying to undo a lock. He is in a room, which has a padlock on it. Ruth Wilson's on the other side, and he's like, oh, Ruth Wilson. And he is like... He's like, have you got the keys? And she's like, no. And he's like, oh, I've locked myself out of the house. And she's like, well, that's your problem. And he's like, fine, I'm going to undo the lock.
Wow, how
so he just like, so he just gets his credit cards and, you know, just tries to jimmy it. And it's this kind of 90-minute avant-garde movie about someone trying to unlock the keys to their soul. That's the metaphor.
That I could totally buy Tom Hardy doing a film where it's just him talking in a room by himself.
It sounds like some sort of abstract view of gender separation. He's locked in a room, Ruth Wilson's on the other side, and neither will cooperate to meet in the middle.
It's about the soul, it's about gender politics and sexual politics, and it's about undoing a lock.
Okay, well, here is what the true IMDb description of Locke, starring Tom Hardy and Ruth Wilson, is about. It is, a single phone call causes the life of a successful construction manager to unravel during his drive home.
I'll be honest, you weren't super wrong.
I think I'd rather see your version, Dan. It sounds,
yeah, me too.
It sounds very sort of introspective and art housey with a lot of subtext going on.
That's kind of what I go for.
I'd buy a ticket for that.
Good. Right. I might kickstart it later.
All right, now are you ready?
Yes, as much as I can be.
Okay. Your movie that you're going to accept is called Cuban Fury, and it stars Nick Frost and Chris O'Dowd.
I know what this is about, though.
Go ahead. I've already got an image of some Cuba going crazy, so if you can top that.
I can deviate from what I know and give you an alternative. And so it's got...
No, just, you could say if there's no wrong or wrong answer here.
Oh, I like that. I was good at subjects at school where there was no wrong answers. So it's Nick Frost and who else, isn't it?
Chris O'Dowd.
Chris, oh, okay. All right, okay, so Cuban Fury is Nick Frost, who's playing a Cuban drug cartel man who runs the cartel, and Chris O'Dowd is a cop from 1952 who's stuck in 1952, and his twin brother comes back from the future saying, oh, Pablo Sanchez, known as Cuban Fury in the year 2027, is destroying everything in sight, and there's only one person who can stop it because you are his one true love, so you need to come with me, twin brother, in my time machine to 2027, and we're going to take him down, just the two of us. That's Cuban Fury.
Very nice. Very nice.
That's good. Do you know what the real plot of it is now?
Well, kind of. It's Nick Frost doing Cuban dancing to impress Rashida Jones, I think. And shit like that. It's like a romantic comedy with salsa dancing or something in it.
Yep. A former salsa prodigy attempts a comeback years after his career was ruined.
How was it ruined? Was it like an alligator bit his leg off?
Yes. That's all perfect.
Sweet.
I'm enjoying this so much that I actually want to find one for you, Gwen.
Okay.
And I want to challenge you to one, so I'm quickly...
Don't pick the railway man, because I'm looking at it right now.
I wasn't. Let me try and find a good one. Okay, I've got one for you. Gwen, now it's your turn. You ready?
Okay.
No, this is rubbish. I don't know who's in it. They're all foreign.
That's fine.
Let me find... You know what? Screw it. You have to go with foreign people. You're going to have to make it even harder. Gwen, I'm giving you Tom at the Farm. Go.
Wait, who's in it?
What? Tom at the Farm?
I don't know. It was the first thing that came up on IMDb, and I thought it sounded amusing. Xavier Dolan's in it. Pierre V's Cardinal. I'll find you an English one if you want.
No, I just didn't. What was the title of it again?
Tom at the Farm.
Tom at the Farm?
Yeah.
Tom at the... What? Did you say thong?
I don't know what you're saying. Tom
at the Farm. At the farm.
Okay. I will find.
Okay, so I'll tell you what the movie's about. I'll tell you what the movie's about. I got it. I got this. Okay. So this movie is clearly a French pretentious beach trip where a family goes to the beach and they all have umbrellas and they're upset because the family next to them has different, nicer umbrellas. And so for the rest of the film, it becomes like an umbrella heist film.
Oh.
And they're trying to steal each other's umbrellas. And then there's kissing and a beach ball.
Well, it certainly deviated from the farm concept, but...
Yeah, where's the farm?
And it's all a musical. It's all a musical.
Where's the farm in all of this? It's not Tom at the Beach.
I heard Tom at the Song, so...
Oh, all right.
Well, it's actually... Okay, so what's the real plot? It's actually the story of Tom, who is in the grip of grief and depression following the death of his lover.
Ooh.
So you couldn't really be further removed from the actual plot, to be honest.
To be honest, I think I really do like the sound of Gwen's better. I mean, there's umbrella heists going on.
Yeah.
And kissing.
Umbrella heist
and
musical.
Fun fact about the lead guy, Xavier Dolan, it's his birthday today.
Oh, so happy birthday. Everybody go buy a ticket for Tom at the Farm, which
actually,
is really...
He's very handsome, too.
Tom at the Beach.
Tom at the Beach.
Yeah, that's kind of Tom at the Beach.
I love this game. I think this is great.
It'll be back next week.
Yay. I love it. I think it's fun. It's kind of hard. It's actually really quite hard to think on your feet.
It is, isn't it?
But I think Gwen did pretty well there. It's like she almost knew exactly. She just pulled it from her brain.
I think Gwen probably won this week.
I would say so,
I screwed up the introduction and still Gwen managed to come out with Umbrella Thief musicals.
And she had a beach ball in there, which, you know, is always good.
Top marks for the
beach
ball.
Well, the beach ball is like a character, too. Oh, kind of like Wilson.
I was going to say, is it like a Wilson-esque character? Does it speak?
Yeah. No, it just like rolls around and shit. And like, it's a beach ball.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so there's a more existential relationship between the beach ball and
yeah,
Tom.
It's like the beach ball is us. We are the beach ball.
Oh, nice. Is that the tagline for the poster? We are the beach ball.
No, you don't want to give away your whole hand early on. I think that should be the twist at the end where it's like, oh man, did you get that we were the beach ball? And people are like, no, I thought you were the beach ball. I don't know.
I thought Tom was. I thought Tom's infidelity was.
It's a thinking man's film.
It definitely sounds it.
Tom at the farm. It's just for the thinkers. And they're like, why? This has nothing to do with a farm. It's all on the beach. Exactly. You had to think about it, didn't you?
Oh, awesome. I want to review that for next week. That's what I'll be bringing in. I think our other game kind of pales in comparison now. But let's play it anyway. It's Box Office or Bust, in which I get all of us to sort of jump through hoops and predict films and money and things in not that order. Gwen had a pretty fantastic run in the last round, which was our Oscar special. Pretty much she swept every category and got a full house, putting her at top, me in second, and Dan for like the first time in possibly forever in third place. But that could have changed. Let's have a look. So our predictions were from 2 weeks ago. And they were, the following results were Son of God, number 5, with 10.3 million. The Lego Movie at number 4 with 10.9. Non-Stop at number 3 with 15.8. Number 2, Mr. Peabody and Sherman with 32.2, and number one was 300 Rise of an Empire with 45 million. The results from that week are as follows. Gwen got number one and two correct. She predicted that 300 would, in fact, trump the talking dog and his little boy friend. That's a boy, not his actual friend, because that would be a strange message to send to children in an animated feature. So she got number one and number two correct, so that's 2 points for Gwen. I got number three, that was the only one I got. I got Non-Stop at number three correct, so that's a point for me. Dan, however, kind of redeemed himself from Oscar night. Got one, two, and three correct, so that's all three, giving him 4 points in that particular category. In terms of closest cash prediction, Dan did pretty good as well. He got the closest cash prediction for 300 and for Mr. Peabody and Sherman, giving him an extra 2 points. And I got the closest cash prediction for Non-Stop, giving me 1 point. However, the totals for that week, Dan came out on top with 6 points. Gwen got two and I got two, leaving the total standings. Gwen still on top with 36 points.
Yeah.
But me and Dan tied for second now with 27. So there is no third place at the minute. It's just one and two, which means it's going to be a fight to get second for next week. So quite the redemptive week for you in the last round there, Dan. Feeling a bit better now?
Yeah, I do. That was a bit of a relief, actually. It's given me hope. It's given me the courage to go on.
Films that you've got coming out this week are the previously mentioned Divergent, and that's coming out to 3,800 theatres. That's the largest of the releases. You've got God's Not Dead, which is kind of in between minor and major release, 780, and Muppets Most Wanted is the other big film this week with 3,194 screenings. So seeing as you came out on top, Dan, last week, do you want to go first? Do you want a quick reminder of the top five as it is now?
Yeah, please.
Because what we did there, that was from 2 weeks ago. So the way the top five stands now is, as soon as this page loads, I shall tell you. It is... Oh, you are kidding me. Mr. Peabody, I put my faith in you. And you came number two, and then you climbed to the top... Oh, goddamn talking dogs. Number five, the current standings for this week. I'm going to throttle that dog. Number five, Tyler Perry's The Single Moms Club with 8 million. Number four is Nonstop with 10.6. Number three is Need for Speed with 17.8. Number three, 300 Rise of an Empire with 19.2. And as previously mentioned, Mr. Peabody and Sherman with 21.8. So that's Tyler Perry, Nonstop, Need for Speed, 300, Mr. Peabody. And your big films this week, Divergent and The Muppets. So Dan, what do you think is going to do what this week?
Okay, I'm gonna go for Divergent in number one. It sounds like it's got quite a bit of buzz about it. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna go pretty big actually, and I'm gonna go 66 million opening weekend. Yeah, I'm gonna go quite high with it, I think. Uh-huh. Followed by The Muppets Most Wanted, which is gonna come in down at 29 million. Followed by Mr. Peabody in third place, holding on just into double figures with 10 million.
Okay. Gwen, do you want to go first, next, or after me, or what do you want to do, seeing as we both got 2 points? You can go next. All right. So what do you think is going to do well?
Yeah, okay. So I am going to kind of shadow Dan and stay Divergent, and I'm going to go with 69 million. And then Muppets Most Wanted at 34 million. And then Mr. Peabody at, we'll say 12 million.
All right. Well, I'm going to play it safe, and I'm going to go with what seems to be the logical running order, which is what you guys had put forward. I'm going to go with Divergent, but I'm going to go a little bit lower than you guys. Because I don't know that much about it, but I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt. So I'm going to say 50 even for Divergent at number one. Number two, I'm going to go with The Muppets. And I'm going to say 31 and Mr. Peabody and Sherman at number three. And I'm going to say 9.5. I'm going to throw in a point for a change. So, yeah, that's what I'm going with. That's my predictions. If you want to play along, you can still do so. Jump over to screeninvasion.com, leave your predictions in the show notes for episode 114. Let us know what you think is going to do what. And of course, any other correspondence or feedback you want to leave, that's the place to put it in there as well. But other than that, that's Box Office... Blah, I can't even say it. Box Office or Bust for this week. We'll see how we fare next week. But other than that, that's... Unless you guys have got anything else you want to throw in?
No, I'm ready. They're my box office predictions. I'm done. Sorted with them.
Okay,
you're awesome. Done now.
Yeah. I'm feeling confident. I've got that burst of ego again.
The only thing to ask then, before we wrap up this episode, is where are you going to be on the internet for the following week, and what kind of things have you got for people to be looking at with the rise and stuff? So Dan, where are you going to be, and what have you got in the pipeline?
As always, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/DanielSarath. I've got some reviews up on screeninvasion.com, which you can go and check out if you want to. There's a review of Zero Theory up there, which sort of goes into a little bit more detail about why I was so disappointed with it and some of the flaws. There's a review of Under the Skin up there as well, which I talked about on the last episode, which is very much the polar opposite and is very, very high starred review. So yeah, if you want to go and read them, check them out. Otherwise, I'm on Letterboxd, the film social networking site thing. Letterboxd.com/tsarath.
Awesome. What about you, Ms. Reyes? Where are you going to be and what have you got for people to be checking out?
You can find me on Twitter. /RealVixen and at realvixen.com and redcarpetcrash.com.
Here's something I've just remembered. Did you manage to get a little thing from Nick Cage for us or not?
Oh, I didn't. He was a delightful man, but he did not have time for that.
He doesn't have time for that kind of nonsense. Well, kudos. No. I have more respect for him for not doing that, I guess. But at least we know he's nice. That's always a plus.
Yeah, he's
right?
Very nice. Cool. Very, very nice.
You can find me at twitter.com/IamMalkovich. You can also find stuff I do about films and music and other things at daysoffuturepast.com. That's DAZE of futurepast.com. You can find reviews for that Freddie Gibbs album I talked about, and Cheap Frills, which is a film I can't believe I didn't mention this. Cheap Frills. I think it comes out this Friday. Yep. On general release, and is it on VOD as well?
So good.
I think, but yeah, it is so good. It is incredibly tense, but also really quite funny, and it shouldn't be in places, but it is, with lots of wonderful subtext in there. Anyway, go to daysoffuturepast.com to see what I thought of it. Full review up there. But yeah, that's the place to go if you want to see more and hear more from me. Other than that, make sure you stay tuned to screeninvasion.com. There's plenty of good stuff coming in all the time, all day, every day. So make sure, if you haven't already, go peep that out. And of course, come back next week when we'll be back with episode 115 and plenty more japes probably to be had.
Yeah.
So do it. Also, we're on iTunes as well. So if you haven't subscribed yet, then shame on you. And secondly, go do it, because that would be nice. Yeah. But then that's it. Episode 114. Lovely speaking to you all again. Goodbye.